A reading this morning from the Epistle of James, beginning in the first chapter and the 16th verse. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures. Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Therefore, put away all filthiness and rampant wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word, which is able to save your souls. This is our story, the word of the Lord.
Please stand with me for the gospel reading. The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to St. Matthew. Glory to you, Lord Christ. You have heard that it was said to those of old, "You shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council. And whoever says, 'You fool,' will be liable to the hell of fire. So if you are offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift. Come to terms quickly with your accuser while you are going with him to court, lest your accuser hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the guard, and you be put in prison. Truly I say to you, you will never get out until you have paid the last penny." This is the gospel of the Lord. Does anyone remember triple jump in school? Anyone do triple jump? It's the one sport you would only do one time a year. And the reason for that is it's stupid. I was thinking about it this morning. I was like, I hated triple jump. And part of why I hated it was because I loved all things sports. And what did we used to call it in Saskatchewan? I think it was field day is what we call it. And we do a whole day of like track and field stuff. And I would clean house. Like first place ribbons for everything. It was like one of my favorite days of the year until triple jump. And triple jump, I just could not figure out. I couldn't get the sprint, jump, little jump, big jump process. And so the last time I remember doing triple jump, I quit angrily and cried a little bit to myself because I was so frustrated with the process. Here's why I bring this up. Some of this verse feels a little bit like that. We're studying the book of James. We're still in chapter 1. And we're in verse 19, and we've spent the last few weeks looking at this part of James where he says, "Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger." There's a triple pause here that I'm starting to see. The triple pause is you got to be quick to hear, so don't do anything but control your insides. Be quick to pause, James is saying. Then he says, be slow to speak. So hold the pause longer. Hold it again and make sure you're not just speaking quickly. And then now, be slow to anger to complete the pause. So it's a triple pause. Slow, slow, slow. He's slowing everything down to try and help us understand how to live rightly, how to live well. So what's happening in this triple pause? The main thing is this. We're taking responsibility for our emotional health and maturity. That's what we're doing in the pause. James, the brother of Jesus, leader of the Jerusalem church in the first century, is saying that we cannot be spiritually mature without being emotionally mature. Can I just let that sit in the room for a second? I want you to think about that for a second. We cannot be spiritually mature and not be emotionally mature. Isn't that challenging? But it's also clarifying to go, okay, this is what he is moving us towards. We have something called pilgrimage where we do like a slow, deliberate discipleship in our church. And so we have a group this year called Pilgrimage On The Way, which is trying to work out these kind of real life issues. Our spiritual health, our emotional health, our relational health. We're moving on to sexuality and then marriage in the coming months. All this time I've been spending in the New Testament scriptures on this stuff and just realizing this is everything the apostles are writing about all the time in the first however many years of the church. Is they're focused on going, if Jesus is who he is, and if he's done what he says he's going to do, which is to save us, really redeem us from the power of sin and evil, and he's going to transform our lives, then that looks like a different way of emotionally living. It looks like a different way of thinking. It looks like a different way of relating to people. True Christianity should lead to this kind of maturity. Now, in some ways, we can look at that and go, oh man, I'm so far from that. But that's not the good news. The good news is Jesus makes this possible. Jesus does this work in the heart of the Christian. This is what God is always looking to do in your life, is help you develop this part of you into wholeness and health. So what James is getting at is that we must become aware of our inner surge of emotion, be able to name them, diagnose what's causing this emotion to rise in me, and let those parts of our hearts be received by the love of Christ before anything is done outwardly. Before we say anything, before we let any micro expressions slip, before we do anything hastily, the goal is what surges within us would rise up into the arms of Christ where he loves that part of you, where he envelops that part of you with his provision for you. What this then does, having received the love of Christ, it rewrites, transforms that inner process so that our love towards other people can be true. So if our inner surge is loved, then we are empowered to love what's in front of us, whether it's a situation or a person or a problem. We want to be able to love authentically from deep within our hearts, don't we? Don't you want to like want to love instead of performative love? Have you ever been in that spot where you're like, I've got a big surge inside and I'm ripping mad, but I'm going to pretend that's not there because I know it's bad, and I'm going to choose to do the right thing, but I'm gritting my teeth. Anyone ever done that? And you know, I'm doing this out of discipline, but my heart is not there. The end goal of spiritual maturity is not a life like that, where we're just outwardly performing but inwardly fuming. Spiritual maturity looks like I actually want to love this situation because I've been loved internally. This is what James is saying would allow us to listen well, to know others, to know situations like Christ has known us through the incarnation. And in listening well, then words can be chosen wisely for the benefit of others, not just as a pressure relief valve in us to go, I can't contain my surge anymore. I've got some things to say. Instead, it's, let me speak truth with love and grace and hope. Let me try and bring about life to this situation with real affection. Isn't that what we want? Isn't that what we're journeying towards? So in order to do that, we've got to complete this section of James, and we have to look at anger. Who's excited for today? Anger. Anger's a problem. Anger's tricky because we know it's supposed to have, there's a good reason for it. We know anger's not all wrong, all bad, right? So we're always stuck in this spot to go, how much of it's good? How much of it's unhelpful? When should I express it? When shouldn't I? It's super complicated. I don't know if I'm going to fix that today. But we'll try to explore it and see what kind of clarity comes out of it in the scriptures. So let's go back. Here's the whole verse that James is saying. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. For the anger of humanity does not produce the righteousness of God. Isn't that a great verse? This is actually one that I adore. I love this verse. So here's the two key things that we see in this statement. What we know about anger from what James is saying is, number one, we should be slow to it. That's clear in this text, isn't it? So we should be reluctant or hesitant, even resisting anger within ourselves to allow we want to hold that back, our hearts back from being allowed into anger. So that's clear, right? Number one, we know anger should be slow. Number two, because, James uses this word, for, we always want to watch for that in the New Testament scriptures because the apostles and the leaders will say one thing and they'll go for or because of, because the anger of humanity does not produce, helpful word, does not achieve, does not bring about the righteousness, so the goodness of God. So those are the two very clear things that we can know. We should be very slow to move towards anger because we know that anger doesn't accomplish goodness. Do you hear me? Is that clear enough? Anger isn't the way that God's righteousness is achieved, is what James is saying. That is super helpful. Because how often is the surge within us, my anger is going to make what's wrong right? How much is that what's going on inside of us? Just me? Right? Anger is going to make what's wrong right. James is saying the anger of humanity does not achieve that. That's helpful. And so that's the crux of what James is saying. When facing difficulty, the brokenness of this world, avoid anger as much as possible because as a tool, anger cannot achieve or bring about the goodness of God. So it's a tool problem. Now here's the thing. This tool called anger, my family of origin loved that tool. Loved that tool. Whatever problem they saw in this world, my family said, that's a nail, and anger's a hammer, and anger will fix it. Anyone else's family do that? Liberally use anger as like, this is what we do when there's a problem. So for a lot of us, this is deeply ingrained. This is a well-worn path of how we respond to difficulty, how we respond to problems, how we respond to what's wrong in this world is, let's use anger to fix it. Now, what is anger? Let's start with some definitions. When we look at the Bible and we look at psychology today, we get different definitions. I think it's helpful for you to be aware of both because you're receiving information a lot. I mean, psychology is a steady stream of information today in our media world, right? Most of your social media is full of, you know, couch psychologists. But so I think we want to be able to go, what does the Bible actually say about this? What does psychological sciences say? How do we understand this together today? Now, the biblical definition is it's a moral, emotional response of the heart to a perceived wrong or threat expressed as opposition to what is seen as evil or unjust. So in the Bible, we have we're kind of taught that we should have a moral, emotional response to evil or injustice. Right? That's the human response to going, this is not right, this is not good. The psychological definition is more like anger is an emotion and bodily response to perceived threat or unfairness that mobilizes us to defend ourselves or our values. So anger is a kind of defense mechanism to threat. Now, what is the difference? I think psychologically, it focuses on how the body and mind react to perceived threat and what that reaction prepares us to do. Biblically, I think it focuses on our moral and spiritual kind of orientation. Is this anger aligned with God's holy opposition to evil? Is the question that Christians are always asking. Is this a right response to evil, or is this my wounded ego? This is what the Bible is trying to help address. Is that we're kind of stuck in this spot where we're going, I can't tell if my anger is good or bad. Is my anger righteous with God against evil, or is my anger really just about my wounded ego? And the Bible is trying to push on that. James is really addressing both. He assumes the inner surge, that's what we've been talking about, the quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger, is saying your system gets aroused when you feel threatened. That needs to be noticed. It needs to be slowed down and reframed because the threat may not actually be real. And then it should be assessed for its morality. Is this real evil or just my perception and framing of it? But here's what we know. We know the way anger works in our lives. We know that our mental frameworks tell a story about what we're experiencing. And it's often rooted in our past experiences and our relationships. That's where the threat is perceived, is we have a kind of pattern recognition. Somebody comes up to you and talks to you and makes you feel a certain way as though you're being attacked. Your inner life responds to that, reacts to it, and goes, wait a second, and tries to create safety. Isn't that what happens to all of us? We view the situation or the person in front of us through the lens of the stories we've lived, and we kind of go, look, the story's continuing. And the anger lights up when we identify some kind of potential danger. I won't go through all of these examples, but we see danger constantly. We're constantly looking out for it, trying to assess if it's coming towards us. And if we get ourselves in a situation that's saying, I'm not safe right now, this is dangerous for me, if I don't shut this down, I'll be taken advantage of, they're trying to hurt me, those are the types of thoughts that trigger what? Anger. Anger as a defense. Anger as a tool to get through it. Think about shame and how it talks to us. I look stupid right now. They're seeing the worst version of me. Everyone now knows I'm a failure. If I don't fight back, I'll be humiliated. Every guy knows that feeling in the ice rink change room, or these moments where someone's getting picked on, and if I don't show anger, they're going to own me. I'm going to look weak. I'm going to be humiliated. The fear of being rejected. They don't really want me here. I'm being pushed out. They're doing this because they don't care about me. These are the stories we tell based on the information that's happening around us. We take it and we tell a story. No one is listening, so I have to raise my voice. That is a phrase that we use consistently in my household. Right? Why are we screaming and yelling? They won't listen to me. Nobody listens to me. Isn't this the kind of phrases that we get? Because that's what's there. This fear of being rejected. Nobody cares about me, so I've got to force it. I've got to fight for it. How about I'm losing control of this situation? They're taking something from me that is mine. If I don't take charge, everything will fall apart. No one is listening, so I'm going to force it. These types of phrases, these stories we tell ourselves, are how we take control. This is what anger promises us to do. Here's the energy and the strength that you need to make things yours. So you're no longer the victim. So what we see is that anger begins as the heart's reaction to a perceived wrong or a threat. And that's where the surge comes from. I'm not safe. Surge. I'm not loved. Surged. Now what anger does, though, is it doesn't just stay inside, does it? It moves from the inside to the out. Once the surge hits, anger typically comes out along four channels. The first is it shows up in your body. Tight chest, clenched jaw, flushed face. Oh, I hate that feeling. When your face is giving it away. You ever felt that? Where you're just like, don't go red now. You're telling everyone you're upset. Shallow breathing. Adrenaline, tension, agitation. This is your body preparing to either fight, to flee, or to freeze. But then it moves into our thoughts, right? That's where anger starts writing the script. They always do this. I can't believe they would treat me like that. I need to shut this down. I have to win this or I'll be humiliated. Anger begins to simplify the story. Good guys versus bad guys. Exaggerate patterns. Always. Never. And build a courtroom in your head that justifies wrath. Isn't this what anger does? Anger likes to make really complex things really simple. You're wrong. I'm right. Always. Never. No nuance. Anger is clear. Or at least the appearance of it. This is why James wants us to be quick to hear. James is trying to calm this down because we have to be careful to not use the power of the pause, though. In these moments, we have to be calm and collect. We have to hold the surge back, but the carefulness comes to go, I'm not going to rehearse the anger narrative in my silence. That was what my family of origin did. Big outbursts, long silences. And in the long silence is this rehearsing of the negative script. So the power of the pause is not for silent treatment filled with angry meditations. The pause is for recentering, for re-engagement. Because anger wants to spill out in the speech. And this is what James is getting at. It spills out of the mouth. Raised volume, cutting tone, sharp sarcasm, interrupting, talking over, lecturing. You always, you never. What's wrong with you? This is where it shoots out of the mouth. And the mouth becomes what? A pressure valve. Anger becomes the speech writer. And we move from truth-telling to weaponized words where we're trying to harm because anger wants justice and pain now. We know anger doesn't just come out in our speech. We used to joke with a friend of mine that they always knew when their mom was mad because she would slam the kitchen cupboard doors. If the doors were being slammed in the kitchen, you knew mom was upset. Right? But this is where in everyday life, in families, things go too far. Pushing, hitting, anger comes out. It also comes out in sending that text or sending that email or withdrawing, shutting down, cold shoulder, punishing distance. Maybe it's control, tightening the rules, power moves, manipulative behavior, recruiting people to be on your side against them, creating factions and telling others. Over time, though, this is what forms the habits of the heart and creates relational patterns of brokenness. And these things can even not just become part of our family culture, but also our church culture. This is just how we do conflict here. Now, if we were to do an honest assessment of our anger patterns, is this all truly morally motivated? Is it about right and wrong for us? Or maybe some of it, but definitely not all of it. Like when we think to the initial happening in a fight, how they made you feel or how they misrepresented you or mistreated you, we tend to justify the inner narrative, the inflamed emotions, the weaponized speech, and violent or harmful actions because we're trying to protect ourselves, not because it's morally right. And I think that's the false promise of justified anger. Once danger is identified or even just felt, anger feels justified. This is wrong. I'm being hurt. This is unjust. And up to that point, anger is simply a reaction to a need to create safety. And this is, I think, what James is pushing on. We begin to believe that because our anger is justified, anger will now be the thing that restores or creates or achieves goodness. Does it? If we just unleash the anger, do we then restore the goodness? I don't think we do. If anything, what often happens is harm is increased, isn't it? In other words, I think what James is getting at is we trust anger to produce goodness, and it is failing us. Because what anger promises it can do is if I raise my voice, they will finally understand. If I let them feel my anger, they will change. Do they? Is anger the change agent in people's lives? Have you noticed that? I was sufficiently angered and expressed my anger, and they have had a full transformation of life because of it. Anyone have an experience of that? I don't have an experience of that. You know, it brought about a real life change in salvation. I haven't seen it yet. If I unload, I will feel better and this will be fixed. Do we tend to feel that way after? How much do we regret of our angry unloading? Like, oh, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I felt that. Because as soon as we say it, we realize that's not real. Right? Inside, it was like, oh, I justified this feeling about this person. And then when I said it out loud, I knew it was wrong. I knew it was stupid. I knew it was an oversimplification and an exaggeration. If I just hit back, justice will be done. When? Never. In other words, anger promises to make things right by taking charge. It offers quick power, short-term relief, and the illusion of control. But James is making it very clear, the anger of humanity, because it's morally messy. It's full of misunderstanding, misinterpretation. It's full of misreading the situation. It's full of ego. It's full of past hurt and wrong frames. It's full of bad patterns. We are not righteous, are we? And so our anger cannot produce the righteousness of God. It doesn't achieve deeper truth and deeper love and deeper holiness and deeper connection and deeper reconciliation. And this is what I think I've seen in Christianity, is you have this gospel that's supposed to be of God's saving grace, but it's really all about wrath. It's really all about how bad you are. It's really about how God hates you and you need to change yourself. And then all along they're saying it's all this message of grace, but there's so much anger in the air and anger in the pulpit and anger in their interactions. How do you make sense of that good news? How do you ever hear that? Predominantly, what I felt like I was taught was, you are saved by grace, now get your crap together because you're in trouble. Does that sound like good news? What does that produce? More fear, more distance, more self-protection, more damage. So I think the issue isn't that anger is unpleasant. The issue is that we're trusting anger to do what only God can do, which is save. And even more so, we're trusting human anger to achieve something that not even God's anger achieved. When we look back at the whole Old Testament story, we see this consistent refrain. The Lord, a God merciful and gracious, slow to anger, and abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. This is God's resume in the Old Testament. Slow to anger, abounding in steadfast love and faithfulness. God's anger is never a misread of the situation. God's anger is never wounded ego. He perceives evil perfectly. Nothing is exaggerated, projected, or distorted. So when he is angry, it is always holy and truthful and just. And yet, God chooses patience, not venting, because anger alone does not redeem. And that's what we see over and over and over again. God has righteous anger, but he doesn't use it because the anger doesn't produce change. Anger doesn't achieve salvation. Anger doesn't help. You see it? And so if God isn't using anger to save the world, maybe, going out on a limb here, maybe anger isn't the way we change the world. Maybe. How far away is our anger to his anger in perfection? I think it's a bit different. His is perfect and he doesn't use it. Ours is painfully, recklessly flawed and we're like, I think I'll use it for everything. I think it's a mistake. And I think this is James's point. None of this is actually predominantly helpful. There is a time for righteous human anger. I'm not saying there's no appropriate expression of that. And maybe there's another sermon for that another time, but James's point here is to go, this is its deficiencies, and we've got to wrestle with that. If even God does not rely on vented anger as his day-to-day method of making things right, how much less should we trust our anger to produce the righteousness of God? You with me? So when we say, my anger is justified, therefore my anger will fix this. We say that subconsciously. James is saying what we are really saying is, my anger is my savior. My anger will bring justice. My anger will produce righteousness. And James's answer to that is no. Your anger will not produce the righteousness of God. So what will? Now, verse 21, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but James is saying, what your anger will produce is all filthiness and rampant wickedness. He's saying our anger will produce moral dirt and a surplus or overflow of badness. We will contribute to the badness of the world. The anger that shapes how we hear, which is to prosecute everything, shapes how we speak, which weaponizes our words, shapes what we do, attacking and dividing. That inner posture will turn the world into a battlefield of filth. That anger is the engine room of many sins, essentially, James is saying. So we know then, okay, anger isn't the tool that we're looking for. It won't save this situation. It'll only break it further. I think that's the conclusion we need to come to on our anger. Therefore, we want to put it away. And James is saying, instead, receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your souls. This is the good news of it. So let's break it down. Receive with meekness. Again, this is the posture of the pause. We pause in the moment of conflict or in the moment of difficulty to receive with meekness. It means we're lowering our defenses, we're resting from our independence and our self-defense, and we're not going to trust in our self-righteous read of the situation. Because here's the thing in that moment, you cannot receive the gift that God is giving you if your hands are full of weapons. So in the midst of a conflict or a tricky situation, meekness says, I'm not the one that's going to fix all this. Meekness says, I'm not the one that's going to judge this. Meekness says, I'm not the one that's going to fight for themselves in this. I'm going to lay down all my weapons so that I can receive the implanted word. What is the implanted word? It's everything we've talked about the last few weeks. It is the good news word of Jesus. That the Holy Spirit is in you in those moments, seeking to speak to your heart, those inflamed, surging parts of your heart. The Spirit is trying to speak to you the love of God in Christ. To plant it into the spot that this situation has revealed is wounded, inflamed, broken, alone. That's what life does. It makes us feel those spots that go, I'm on my own. Nobody loves me. Nobody's going to take care of me in this. This is wrong, and I've got to fix it. All those parts of you are what make you feel overwhelmed in this life. Agreed? And the Spirit is speaking to that part in your heart, the love of God in Christ. No, you're adopted. You're loved. You're forgiven. You're saved. You're safe in Him. Nothing can threaten you because you're loved by Him. You are secure. Do we believe that? That's what the Spirit is seeking to speak to your heart in those moments. And the promise James is saying is that, not anger, is able to save your souls. Before Jesus is looking to move in your situation or to fix the relationships, Jesus is looking to save that part of your heart that's being exposed in that moment. You, your heart, is the first miracle in that situation. You hear me? That's the good news. Jesus has His eyes on you first and then the situation. And anger is saying, if you use this, you can save yourself. But instead, we're saying, no, I'm putting that away and I'm letting Jesus save this part of my heart. He makes me secure. He makes me feel safe. He makes me feel loved. He makes me me. Not my anger. And what does that do? The presence of Jesus relieves the threat, reorients our hearts away from anger, and enables us to do what we long to do, which is love, to listen well. If you're secure, you can listen. To speak life. If you've heard life in your heart, you have life to give away. And to feel authentically in your emotions, in your thoughts, love, affection for the situation, love and affection for the person. So today I think our decision is this, to go, we have got enough clarity in what James is teaching to know, I am very certain I need a lot less anger in my life. Is that fair? I'm not saying there's no righteous anger, but what we're seeing in James is that if God is not going to use anger to save the world, maybe I shouldn't either. You with me? So we know that enough and know that we want to give the bulk of our efforts to receiving with meekness the implanted word which is able to save our souls. That's the Christian life. So our level up challenge for today is this. Notice the surge. Receive the implanted word to the spot that's inflamed. So you've got to be able to name it, to go, oh, the reason I'm angry right now, or the reason I'm feeling all these emotions is because I'm afraid, or I feel threatened, or I feel unsafe, or I feel out of control. And we're choosing then to put away anger, to go, this is not the tool I'm using anymore. And when we put away the anger, there's this well of love that's allowed to spring up in its place. Really, the level up challenge should have four things. To pursue and cultivate expressions of love. Doesn't this actually sound like the kind of life you want to live? Doesn't it? Like, can we be honest? I think we're tired of anger's messes. We're tired of its false promises and its failure to produce. We actually want a better way, don't we? And I don't see any other escape route from it except the way of Jesus. He comes in and wins this battle of the heart.